Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine.
Hurry in for exceptional offers through December 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Hey friends, I'm Sharon McMahon, host of Here's Where It Gets Interesting. Each week, I speak with authors, experts, and thought leaders on everything from American history and democracy to how to be a better person on the internet. And don't miss my extremely popular docuseries, which educate you on things you never learned in history class. Follow and listen to Here's Where It Gets Interesting on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
8:15 on this Wednesday morning before Thanksgiving. One of the things we're thankful for, Ronald Surpass, former NOPD superintendent, head of the Nashville City Police, Washington State Police, currently a professor of practice in the Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, a consultant to many departments, started as a street cop, right? Tell me about your career with NOPD. Ronald, good morning.
Good morning. Happy Thanksgiving to you and everyone who's listening. I joined the police department in June of 1980. My first assignment out of the academy was the French Quarter. Walked a beat on Bourbon Street, rode a horse on Bourbon Street, became a sergeant in the central city, the 6th District, rode motorcycles, DWI commander, became a lieutenant, was the assistant commander of the French Quarter, and then went to one of the patrol districts. Got promoted to captain, was in charge of the crime lab, one of the most fulfilling jobs I ever had that I never thought I would like. Then I became a major for 6 years and deputy chief for 5 years, and then Washington for 3, Nashville for 7, New Orleans for 4.5, and that was it.
There you
go. That's
a
wrap. 34 years.
And now here you are. So let's talk about this thing with the French Quarter shooting and the ankle monitor and the judge that was notified, because I saw, you know, we're friends with all these people, right? Rafael Goyeneche with the Metropolitan Crime Commission. I saw him talking about how the thing should never have been pled down. But then I talked to Jason Williams yesterday, and he told me that, well, even after it was pled down and there was some kind of problem with the casings or something, some kind of evidentiary problem, they had to plead it down. But even after that, the guy violated parole, and the DA said, no, keep him in jail, and the judge let him out on an ankle monitor after he was let out. And I don't have the note in front of me here, but I think it was like 40-something times that he violated the ankle monitor release. And the judge was notified, and, you know, Matt Dennis over at ASAP, they're on top of it, notified the judge that this guy was violating his order, and the judge didn't do anything about it. Now you got one person dead, 3 shot, if I don't have the story in front of me here. I think that's what it was. You got 2 in jail, I think, 2 at large, or 1 in jail, 2 at large. Tell me if you're going to go back and do an anatomy of this, Chief, and where this failed, and if something like this could be prevented at all. Just tell me about the whole, your take on all of this.
Okay, so, you know, we start with this, that in any city, about 2 to 3% of that population, and it works out across the nation as well, less than 2% of the entire nation of the country is actually incarcerated in state prisons or federal prisons for crimes that require jailing. So first off, we're not talking about a huge population. Secondly, judges in Louisiana are elected every 10 years. Maybe that's a little too long. I don't know. It seems like these decisions fade in the background when someone's up for re-election 9 years later.
I didn't realize that. It's a 10-year term?
I think so. I could be wrong,
no,
but I think it's a 10-year term.
I didn't realize that. Okay,
yeah.
It could be.
I know they have to be an attorney for 10 years before they can run. I might have got the numbers. But here's the thing. Judges at the state level are elected by the people as a representative democracy of what the people want. Do the people of New Orleans want this kind of crime, right? So that'd be the way of looking at that. Mm-hmm. Secondly, I mean, I get what Mr. Williams said. I get what Rafael said. I trust and respect both of them in different ways. But guess what? The public just doesn't understand. You got an electronic device on an ankle, and a judge is notified repeatedly that a violation is occurring. Why isn't this guy one of the 2% who's incarcerated? Mm-hmm. Why is he the one that they keep taking chances on when 98% of the people are held hostage by these 2%? And that's kind of the way I look at it, is that every crime requires a victim. That means somebody got hurt. And every time you look at these repeat violent offenders, Tommy, they all have the exact same profile. They're later in life than they can be touched by maybe some of the help programs that you would like to think would help. Sometimes they're just not going to matter to them. And they continually show to the criminal justice system that they do not intend to comply. This guy is clearly an example. I don't intend to comply. You can put two bracelets on me. I'm still not going to comply. And if a judge or a court or a police department doesn't hold those people accountable, what's to stop them from continuing to do so? Now, I get the people who are all concerned about criminal justice reform. There's a lot of reasons for reform I think we can all agree on. But I think everybody agrees with no. Repeat violent offenders do not deserve the right to walk the streets of citizens who are healthy, happy, and following the law. So it's a breakdown in the system. It's a breakdown in the clear system of this guy sending the message he wasn't going to pay attention to the law.
Yeah, let me take a break. The only reason I wanted to bring it up, look, I consider both Raphael and Jason friends, as do you, I'm sure. But mm-hmm. I just think this is a case study of how the system failed and how it led to a brazen French Quarter shooting at a couple of different levels. And it goes to how once somebody decides to break the law, what it takes to keep them in jail and at what point it can fail. And we'll go through that, okay, when we come back?
Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Ronald Surpass, our guest. 6 years, the term for a judge that's elected. We looked that up just, and not trying to call you on anything, Chief. We just wanted to make sure we got it accurate. 820, traffic now, WWL. All right, 825, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Just to be clear, and I don't want to get lost in the weeds here. A state judge, I think, is 6 years. Supreme Court judges, appeal court judges, 10 years. That's not the point. Let me go back with Ronald Surpass here and talk about both. You got the second line shooting and you got the shooting in the French Quarter. From that point, Chief, and I think, you know, people watch Law and Order, they don't understand sometimes the way things really work. In the criminal justice system, so a crime happens, police go out, they try to gather as much evidence as they can, right?
Correct.
And then after that, go ahead. Do you take me through it?
Yeah, so the police will respond to the scene and they'll render aid and they'll protect evidence. The system's based on evidence so that a defendant who has all the rights to defend himself can challenge the evidence. Then they bring it to the prosecutor, who has to bring it to a level called beyond reasonable doubt, where a jury would convict 12-0 or the defendant would plead guilty. Oftentimes you see these multiple defendants plead guilty because it allows them to evade more serious punishment because they usually know that they've done it. Then the judges have to decide what type of confinement, if they're guilty, are they going to continue to be under? Is it as a result of statutory requirements, like if you kill somebody, it's life without probation or parole? Or is it a graduated scale, 5 to 10? And the key piece here in the shooting that happened in the French Quarter is the judge was engaged in making decisions about when that offender was going to be released on an ankle monitor. And it's the judge's responsibility at that point to enforce their rule. The police, the sheriff, the monitoring system, they don't have to be psychics. I'm listening to that commercial you did a few minutes ago. The judge doesn't have to be a psychic. If someone continues to refuse the orders of the court, you don't need psychic intervention to know this person does not intend to follow the rules. Then those cases go to the opportunity for people to challenge evidence against them. And if they win, they win. If they lose, they lose.
So when it comes to the volume of cases that criminal courts handle in the country, there aren't the resources for every case to go to trial. I'm not talking about this specific case. I'm talking mm-hmm. about in general, and it goes to plea bargaining. I was watching a rerun of Better Call Saul last night. For whatever reason, this popped into my head.
Great show.
It is, but that the plea bargain, if plea bargaining were to go away, the courts would be overwhelmed, would they not?
Absolutely. Not only would the courts be overwhelmed, but those who are guilty of a crime who are looking to make a better deal for themselves wouldn't even have the chance to do that. Plea bargaining has two complete sides. One is it fair to people who can't afford good lawyers to plea away their future? There's probably some really good questions to ask about that. But Tommy, what about the multiple armed robber who's up on his third armed robbery who says, look, I don't mind pleading if you give me 5 years instead of 50. So plea bargaining is a two-way street where you have to be sure that people are being given good legal advice that's proper, and people are going to take a chance to reduce their sentences when they know they're guilty. So, yes, you can't manage this system with every case going to trial, and there are two questions. Are people being fairly advised and people using it to reduce sentences for their conduct that they know they did?
And the other part of that is, from the prosecutor's standpoint, and this goes back to the police work and the preservation of evidence, do they have a case with which they can get a conviction? Because at some point, it's kind of like the Wheel of Justice casino. You got to figure out whether you're better off getting half a loaf or none, right? Or a whole loaf.
And that's part of the other, that's the other half of discretion. The police can't enforce every law violation, and prosecutors can't try every case. So it's a synthesizing of reality of case information versus what you might be able to get. By and large, prosecutors and police are on the same team, but they play on two different sides of the ball. It's that natural tension that has to occur. Prosecutors don't accept cases just because police made them. They have to apply their understanding of the law and what they can do.
What does a district attorney, a DA's office investigator do?
They make the they close gaps that the police weren't able to close at the time they made the arrest. Sometimes much better information comes out later. DA investigators are crucially important, and Jason, like any DA, deserves to have as many as they can have because it helps the system work better
for
the defendant and the victim, but the victim first.
That is an important part of this that a lot of times doesn't get attention, don't you think? The investigators.
That's exactly right.
DA's
Yeah, I think the DA office needs them as much as police need police because they're kind of doing two different pieces of the same pie, but they have two different responsibilities, and that's an important thing that they should be staffed for.
Thank you, Chief. Have a nice Thanksgiving. Appreciate your time,
as always. You too.
Ronald Surpass, Professor of Practice, Department of Criminal Justice at Loyola, former NOPD Chief. We'll talk with Steve Geller about the Saints and the Rams when we come back right now, 8:30, time for WWL First News. Look, enjoy your Thanksgiving, eat a lot, but make sure you rest it up on the Saints' Battle of Rams in the Caesars Superdome going for three in a row. Later game, no. Game day starts at 11. First take, Steve Geller, Jeff Nowak, 1 o'clock. Bud Light countdown to kickoff with Bobby Hebert inside the dome. Loge level, Gate B atrium, presented by Craig's Electrical and Generator Service, 305. Do yourself a favor. Turn down the TV and turn up the sound on WWL and sync it up. It's not that hard to do, especially if you listen on the radio. Then after the game, sound off and listen to Deuce and Hoss, of course. And Jeff Nowak on the sideline. Sound off on the Ciroc Point after with the Cajun Cannon, Saints Rams. 10 hours of wall-to-wall coverage starting at 11 a.m. on Sunday on WWL and a free Odyssey app. A big part of that coverage, of course, Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. You do a great job, Steve, on Sunday with the Cajun Cannon. How you?
Doing good, Tommy. Looking forward, obviously, Thanksgiving and then hopefully feasting on the Rams on Sunday. They're definitely one of the teams in the NFL that I despise.
Sacrifice the Rams. I like the way you said that when you talk about feasting them. I never thought about that, but let's do that. Let's talk about this Rams team. What do we know about it? What don't we know about it?
Obviously, a much different look on the defensive side. No more Aaron Donald. He retired going into this season, so we don't have to worry about him. But that front is a young group that's been developing, and they're able to apply pressure on the quarterback decently. So that's going to be something to watch out. Meanwhile, on the offensive side of the ball, man, you got a guy that's, an elite signal caller in Matthew Stafford back there. You can't give him time to pick apart this Saints defense, which we saw him do last year on Thursday Night Football when it was in L.A. You got targets like Puka Nacua, Cooper Kupp, and then a run game, Kyren Williams. But the good news with Kyren, he leads the NFL running backs in fumbles this year, so hopefully that Saints defense can take advantage of that.
Got to tackle him first, just to be clear. Got to get your priorities straight, right? Let me talk about the Rams linebackers. They got Omar Spates, the guy from LSU, who didn't really contribute a lot in Baton Rouge. He seemed like he was hurt a lot. He was a transfer from Oregon, if I remember, Oregon State. Tell me about that Rams linebacker crew.
Yeah, I mean, you got a mix, like you said, of Omar Spates, Christian Rosenblum, and then the guy that I was looking at the Saints potentially drafting, and some of my mock drafts had him go into the black and gold in Florida State linebacker, Jared Verse. Mm-hmm. Good pass rusher, has 4.5 sacks his rookie year. So that's going to be a group to keep an eye on, but hopefully this one game of the black and gold can continue to evolve. I think we saw, obviously, Taysom Hill, the last outing against the Cleveland Browns, get utilized a lot more. And Darren Rizzi talked about that going forward, being able to maximize that versatility of Taysom going forward, whether it's run, pass, or receiving. And then with a guy like Alvin Kamara, who's just been a stud all year long for this black and gold bunch, even though he's been banged up, he's still on the field doing what he can and making a difference.
What about the Los Angeles Rams offensive line?
Yeah, the O-line group they've been up and down in games. There's some matchups where Matthew Stafford's gotten sacked. He's felt that pressure a few times in these other games. They've been able to keep him clean. But obviously in those matchups where Stafford's felt the pressure and has gotten the sacks this season, he has not been as elite as a signal caller. Nobody would be when you don't have time to get rid of the ball. And that's, man, that's a huge key for this Saints team. We saw they were able to at least get to Jameis Winston in the second half of that Cleveland matchup. But for most of the game, I felt like he had way too much time to pick the Saints secondary apart. And because of that, finished with pretty decent numbers. Jameis Winston, he had a good game against the Saints, just didn't end up on the winning side. So pressure going to be key. And we've seen this Rams offensive front full before. So hopefully the pass rush of the black and gold, which has been, mensa this season. Hopefully they can dial things up and just make him uncomfortable in the pocket, because Matthew Stafford, we know, is not a guy that's going to take off, tuck it, and run. But if you give him enough time back there, he'll survey the field and find that open guy.
All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Steve Geller, WWO Sports Director. Saints taking on the Rams, trying to make it three in a row. Let's hope they can. 8:50, 10 till 9, traffic now, WWO. 8:56 now, in the latest edition of the Odyssey Original Inside Black and Gold podcast. Saints are back in action for a six-week sprint to the finish line. So who has the most to prove? Saints sideline reporter Jeff Nowak, WWL Sports Director Steve Geller break down the players with the most to prove the rest of the way on both offense and defense. Plus, share some thoughts on a wild weekend of football we actually got to watch and a lot more. Check out Inside the Black and Gold podcast, available wherever you get your podcast. The aforementioned Steve Geller spending some time with us now. Steve, talk about Darren Rizzi and the change in the team and just the rest of the season. You know, Jeff and I were talking the other day about being able to fan however you wanted. I'm not giving up on anything. Playoffs, I guess, would be still possible, obviously, but it's going to be a journey. Run down the rest of the season for me and realistically, best possible outcomes of what the Saints can accomplish, all that stuff.
Yeah, we heard Darren Rizzi talk about it yesterday, and the fact that he doesn't want his team to be obviously looking ahead. It's the old mantra of one game at a time. So they've been focused on the playing the L.A. Rams this week. But, of course, as fans, we're always looking ahead and dreaming and thinking of what could be the rest of the way with this black and gold bunch. You look at some of the matchups after the Rams squad. You got a team like the New York Giants who have been reeling. Washington Commanders, Jaden Daniels has come down back to earth a little bit after a hot start for the rookie. That other tough game besides this Rams matchup for me, no doubt, in Green Bay, Monday Night Football, the end of December, going to be an interesting matchup. But we've seen this team thrive before and win in cold weather temperatures. Believe me, I was there on the sidelines in Cleveland for that negative temperature game. And then you come home, hosting the Las Vegas Raiders, who haven't been good this year. And then, obviously, it's always tough, a divisional matchup. You end up one. Who knows? This one could be flexed into primetime because the Saints are playing at Tampa Bay the rest of the way. Is closing out the year on a win streak, you know, winning the rest of your games likely? Probably not, but you can keep this hope alive under a guy like Coach Rizzi, who's bringing that energy right now. He says that players came back off this bye week, still dialed in, and focus on the task at hand, being good and executing at practice every single day. And I don't know, can they keep this mojo up under Rizzi? It'll be very interesting. Obviously, we know, too, this is a huge, basically, job audition for him the rest of the way. Can the Saints rely on him for next season, keep things in place a little bit to have maybe a little bit of continuity? If you're seeing this team suddenly now gelling and bonding, playing for one another, which I think a lot of that fun was lost. And obviously during the seven-game losing skid, there wasn't a whole lot of fun going on. That's been back with the black and gold. We'll see if they can maintain it. I'm just enjoying this ride right now. And hopefully, you know what, I'm wishing for we get on this now a positive trend with winning, because the losing skid, you know, it sucked.
Yeah, it did. You got to get hot at the right time. You got to get healthy at the right time. Real quick, we got about 40 seconds left. Talk about the healthiness of the Saints, if you will.
Yeah, the one concern yesterday, not seeing center Eric McCoy at practice. We'll find out more today when the first injury report of the week comes out to see how he's dealing with that hamstring issue, the groin issue, sorry. Tano Passanio, good news. The defensive end is back. going to be in that practice window now open after he suffered an Achilles injury. So some depth on the D-line could be in place.
All right, Steve, thank you. You and your family have a great Thanksgiving. Steve's got a Rummel football player in his family. How many turkeys you got to cook for that young man? Two, three, how many?
Definitely, it's been, you know, eating me out of house and home as he grows older, for sure.
Yeah, I can imagine. Thank you, Steve. Enjoy it. God bless y'all. Steve Geller, WWL Sports Director. We'll come back, talk about keeping your food safe during Thanksgiving. Then we'll get some weekend winners with JR.